Welcome into the NHL at the Rink podcast. As always, Dan Rosen here, Sean Rourke out there. Sean, the Montreal Canadiens have moved on. A sweep. Just as we all saw coming, right?
Well, that's what you're trying to claim, at least on social media. Go. You're trying to claim.
I wasn't going to bring it up, but you did. So
of course I'm going to bring it up. So just just in case you don't follow Dan Rosen on Twitter, it's DRosenNHL, and you should follow him because he sometimes has some good opinions.
Sometimes.
Last night, the Montreal Canadiens win, and here comes Dan wading into Twitter and asks me who's the best team in the North, referencing his stance at the beginning of the season that he really liked what Montreal did. Never put them in the Stanley Cup competition conversation, never put them in the third round of the playoffs, but he liked what they did. They were good free agents. They were going to be a good team. They were going to be more competitive. 2 weeks ago, you listened to this podcast. Dan Rosen says the Toronto Maple Leafs have figured it all out. Montreal Canadiens are roadkill. This is going to be the end of it. It's over. It's finished. And then somehow Montreal wiggles out of it. Dan still says nothing other than, oh, they wiggled out of it. Then he goes and he makes his picks. By the way, he picked Toronto in the first round. Then he goes and makes his picks. Winnipeg wins round two. And then Montreal wins in a sweep. Awesome. Unbelievable. See? They played fantastic hockey. And here comes Dan off the top rope. Like he's known all along that the Montreal Canadiens were the class of the North. Who's the best team in the North, Sean? Gee, I don't know, Dan. Who's the best team in the North? The team that you didn't pick in either round of the playoffs or said was roadkill in the first round? That's probably the team. So congratulations, Dan.
Do you know what the lesson is here? Keep listening because you never know what I'm going to say next, right? That's the lesson. Just keep listening because the opinion might change. That's why if I gave the same opinion over and over again, well, that would be no fun. Yeah. So you have to change. You have to adjust on the fly. And I just brought it full circle, basically. I said at the start of the season, they were the best team in the division, I thought. And here we are. They're the last team standing in the division. Just went back in full circle. And am I going to pick them in the next round? Probably not. No matter who they play, probably not. Not going to pick them. But I do want to, look, before I do this, let's mention, we are going to be joined shortly here by Dave Stubbs, our columnist, Montreal-based. Nobody knows the market and the Canadians and their history better than Dave Stubbs. So he'll be joining us shortly. And we're going to be joined by Bruce Boudreau, the former NHL coach, who is really going to be able to sink his teeth into everything else going on around the playoffs, including the Canadians. But Sean, let me point this one out. Our last Super 16 of the season, right? Who was your number 16 team? Do you recall?
I do. It was the Ottawa Senators.
Okay, that's all. I just asked you one question. I just asked you for a simple answer. That's all.
This isn't a trial.
That's all it was.
Where did you have the Montreal Canadiens ranked? I didn't have them ranked.
Yes, you did not have them ranked. I did at number 16. I had the Jets 15, but I mean, I do.
So where'd you have the Maple Leafs?
I had the Maple Leafs at 9. And I had the Oilers at 10. You had the Maple Leafs at 6 and the Oilers at 7.
Yeah. So
just saying, you didn't have them ranked.
That's right. And I stand by my opinion. I haven't changed my opinion 14 times during the season. I didn't like Montreal at the beginning of the season. I didn't like them at the end of the season. I still don't like them that much as far as playoff teams go. I think they're a highly entertaining team. I can watch Corey Perry and Eric Staal play hockey all day in the playoffs. I think they're a fantastic story. I picked against them in both rounds. There's no shame in that. I'm not ashamed of it. And I've been consistent all year. I have not changed. I have not moved my mark 7 times during the season and tried to come back and say, look how smart I am.
That is true.
I'm stupid and I'm fine with it. I'm not trying to hide behind. At some point in the season, I said Montreal was a really good team. And I hope everybody remembers it because that makes me really smart.
See, you admit stupidity. I just try to chase intelligence. You know, it's the same, really. It's the same thing. But anyway, they are there. And it's pretty remarkable what they've been able to accomplish here. And we're going to get into it with Dave in a minute. But I mean, they haven't trailed in 7 straight games. That over 437 minutes, they haven't trailed. Sean, that's a mind-blowing stat to me because when I look at the Montreal Canadiens, I do not see a team that's an offensive juggernaut that can jump out to 3-0 leads all the time. I don't see a team that's, you know, dominant in any one single area. Yet they get a lead, they build on it, they hold it, or it gets tied and they come back and they win. Goaltending obviously is a huge part, but I saw that stat and it, I mean, since May 25th was the last time they trailed in a game, 7 straight games. It blows me away that they've been able to do that because look, they're not a team that I think would be able to do something like that. I don't know that any team would be able to do something like that.
No, and it's been incredible good fortune. You know, they've gotten goals from unusual places. And they're a defense-first team. And I think, look, I think the thing that changes, and I don't think I'm going out of school or saying something that's going to shock our listeners. The game changes in the playoffs. Stuff that you try and get away with in game 43, you're not getting away with in game 43. You're going to get away with in game 4 of the Stanley Cup playoffs.
Right.
There is a different, and go ask the Toronto Maple Leafs and the Edmonton Oilers about this. There is a different mindset of how to play playoff hockey. And to me, I look at the Montreal Canadiens and you know what I see? I see the St. Louis Blues from 2 years ago. Same exact team. Big, nasty, mean defensemen who keep everything clean. A collection of forwards. They maybe don't have a Tarasenko, you know, that one game breaking guy. And then a goalie who's just on top of his game. And there's clearly different goalies. Jordan Binnington was just caught lightning in a bottle as a rookie. Carey Price has been the goaltender of his generation, who's caught a bit of lightning in a bottle because this is not the Carey Price we've come to know for the last couple of years. So, but that's what they remind me of. They remind me of the 2019 St. Louis Blues, who played almost exactly the same way, get a lead and just strangle you and beat you up and try and get deep into a series and just wear you out.
Yeah. And Carey Price, as you mentioned, 7-0. 9.43 save percentage and a 1.64 goals against in that 7-game streak. The penalty kill is 100% at 15 for 15. So it all
with
adds
a couple
up
of, with a couple of shorthanded goals
with three.
Let me just say this before we get to Dave Stubbs. In game 4 against the Winnipeg Jets, I might not have given up a goal against the Winnipeg Jets. They did nothing. Their season was on the line. What'd they have? 16 shots? The two goals came from their defenseman, their 6'7" defenseman, Stanley. Like, what were they doing?
They didn't look like they wanted to cross the red line. Or they knew how. They didn't look like they knew how to cross the red line. They didn't want to be forechecked. None of it. But anyway, Montreal won. So let's get to Dave Stubbs. As I mentioned, he's our columnist up in Montreal. Big-time hockey historian. Dave, thanks so much for hopping on. I guess not much going on up there in Montreal right now. Pretty quiet, right?
Yeah, it's the 6th of June, 7th of June, 8th of June, whatever, right? It's a nice sunny day. The weather's spectacular. It's warm enough to fry the proverbial egg on the sidewalk. But instead, hockey fans are somewhat engaged up here.
They are definitely engaged, and you're seeing it, obviously, the Habs being where they are right now. Now, I, for one, believed in this team, Dave, at the start of the season. Didn't believe in them as the season went on. But are you surprised at where, you know, at what they've been able to accomplish here? What they've been able to accomplish is amazing. Are you surprised at all here?
I am, and I would suggest that I'll defer to the great Guy Lafleur, whom I sat down with today, and Guy is surprised. He said he's pleasantly surprised. He said he's absolutely thrilled with how they've done. He said, you just back up 2 weeks to this team being down 3-1 against the Toronto Maple Leafs in the first round, and he said everybody figured these guys are pretty much toast. Twice they were one overtime shot away from elimination. They're playing the Toronto Maple Leafs, who are 18 points superior in the regular season in the Scotia North Division. You look at everybody in this country, I think, and certainly from the center of the hockey universe, as they like to call themselves, Toronto, they figured that this was their year, right? I mean, if ever the Maple Leafs had a shot, this was going to be it. I mean, it seemed like all of the pieces were in the right place. They seemed like the guys who were going to do it, and I thought that they were going to make pretty quick work of the Montreal Canadiens. But you know, the Habs go down 3-1, and these guys believe in themselves. And I know it's a cliche with no I in team, but there's no question these guys are playing as a team, and the players and Lafleur today spoke to that. They say that they don't remember the Montreal Canadiens playing as more of a unified team than how these guys are playing now.
But even unified, I mean, this was a team that barely got into the playoffs and you know, didn't have the skill to challenge against the other three teams in the North. How are they doing it?
I guess, Sean, it comes to belief. I mean, I don't know. Is it smoke? Is it mirrors? Are they pulling rabbits out of their hat every game. You know, this was a team that really, they had no business last year, right? I mean, they get into the expanded playoffs because of COVID, and they get in and they have a little bit of a run. They beat Pittsburgh and they give Philly a little bit of a test. They got to show some of these young guys a bit of playoff ice. And so they came back this year. They struggled a bit. They were up and down. And this was an up and down team all season. But here they are now, champions of Canada, right? I mean, there's no room for that banner to hang in the rafters of the Bell Center, but it is what it is. And I think the Canadians understand that they are going to go now as far as they are going to go as a team. It always used to be that this team would go as far as Carey Price was going to carry them. Well, Price has been a big part of the story this playoff season, but he has not been exclusively the story. And that has been really quite remarkable.
That being said, Dave, for some reason, Carey Price seems to be the goalie who at least to me, can get inside the opposition's head. I think he did it against Toronto. I think he did it against Winnipeg. I don't know if it's the level of respect that he has around the league, because clearly the players greatly respect him, or what it is. What is it about Carey, do you think, that allows him to, I guess, have that mental edge?
He can see the puck, certainly. He's been able to see the puck better this playoff season than he probably has all season. And it's like the defense is keeping some of those shooting lanes open where he can actually see the puck. But LaFleur spoke to this today. He said that for some reason, Toronto and Winnipeg didn't understand that if they were going to have any success against the Canadians, they were going to have to take Carey Price out of his bubble. They were going to make him uncomfortable. And LaFleur made me laugh when he said, look, against Billy Smith of the Islanders, Steve Shutt and I would go out in the first 5 minutes of a game, we'd just shoot at his head. He said, and we'd drive Billy insane. I said, yeah, but I mean, Billy would go crazy if the paper boy missed his front porch. So, I mean, right. It's not saying a lot, but I mean, they just took Billy into a different place. And LaFleur couldn't quite understand why somehow these guys weren't going in there and getting into that blue paint and really making a mess of things for Price and trying to take him out of that bubble that he's in. So, you know, he's been in another zone, absolutely. I mean, you know, he won the first game, lost the next three against Toronto, but he's been brilliant. He's, what, 197, 935 with a shutout. But again, he's only been part of the story. And I think he understands that he's got guys playing better in front of him than he has ever seen in Montreal.
Part of the reason they're not going into the crease and rattling Carey's pots and pans is because there's Shea Weber and Joel Edmondson and Ben Sherratt on that blue line that are going to not let you get there, and B, if you get there, make you pay a hellacious price. And then the thing against Winnipeg is they never gained the zone. How can you crash the net if you can't cycle the puck? I mean, they never had possession of the puck in the offensive end. So, but you know, as we start to look forward, and we don't know who Montreal is going to play, it's going to be an intriguing matchup either way, right? It's going to be Vegas with Marc-Andre Fleury coming home and Patrick Reddy really coming home, or it's going to be the Quebec Nordiques in Colorado Avalanche clothing. And both of them are rife with storylines, but I would think either of those teams would be able to generate a little bit more of an offensive presence in the attacking zone. And B, either of those teams will have their number one center, at least to start the series. And you know, I think Montreal's gotten away with one being suspended after one game. And then the other one wasn't the number one center, but he was a very important number two center getting hurt in the first game. And that certainly helped out their matchup. So it's interesting to see how things are going to go going forward. But right now, as we do this on Tuesday, that's not really the question, because the Canadians are probably going to be sitting around until at least Saturday watching two teams beat the living daylights out of each other and smiling the whole time. And then I guess we'll decide how good they are, but they've certainly blown away everybody's expectations at this point, including Guy Lafleur.
Well, they've been playing with house money, right? Since they were down 3-1 against Toronto and they come back, win two overtime games and then knock off Toronto in game seven. I don't think too many people gave the Habs a shot when they were down 3-1. Even when they're going into game seven, you're saying, okay, has the magic run out? But I mean, here's a team now, their power play is ranked 9th. And this is a power play that earlier this playoff season was going head to head with Kent Dorfman's grade point average in Animal House. Okay. Like these, and for anybody who doesn't know that reference, look it up yourself, Google it. And their penalty kill is now ranked 1st. They've killed 28 of 31 opposition chances. Weber, this, you knew that this was going to be an unconventional playoff season when you're talking using Shea Weber and breakaway in the same sentence. I mean, like, that is just, when was the last time Shea Weber got a breakaway? Like, maybe Pee Wee hockey? I don't know. So, you know, here we are with Weber now, who's, you know, he has a breakaway against Winnipeg. You know that Toto is not in Kansas anymore. He's got 25-27 of ice time. He's 35 years of age. He missed the last 8 regular season games with a thumb injury. The balance of this team up and down has been tremendous. And Dominique Ducharme has been able to use pretty much anyone in any situation. The young kids are out there playing with absolutely no pressure on their shoulders. They're just out there having a great deal of fun, doing what young kids are going to do. It's almost like they're playing pickup hockey. They're just going out and they're just having a blast. They scored 4 shorthanded goals. I mean, Suzuki, Kotkaniemi, and Caulfield have 16 points. You know, so there are so many different parts that are working for this team. And again, has the magic run out? I mean, is this where the dream of Montreal Canadiens fans and the 25th Stanley Cup end? Does it end here? I don't know. I mean, I had the Toronto Maple Leafs beating them, and I had the Winnipeg Jets beating them. So I give up making any predictions on these knuckleheads, because I don't know. I don't know where it's all going to go. But I know right now in Montreal, it is great fun, and it's absolutely sensational having people talking about hometown hockey in the month of June.
That's fantastic. And you know what's fantastic? Watching Marc Bergevin react. Right? Isn't that amazing? I mean, first off, he's in his red suit. He's got his long hair and just going nuts, pumping his fists. And then he's down at the bench, greeting all the players. I love that from a general manager, Dave. I just think that's the best, to see that, the emotion pouring out of him.
Yeah. I mean, I don't ever imagine Sammy Pollock sort of down waiting for the 74, 75, 76 Canadians coming off the ice, having guys jumping into his arms. But you're right. I mean, the energy now is, you can feel it in the city. And everyone has spoken to this who's lived in this town for any length of time. There's a lightness in the step of Montrealers when the Canadians are doing well. And you can only imagine if these were conventional times and that building was packed with 21,000 fans. I mean, how absolutely ridiculous it would be, because right now you have thousands out in the streets. They've loosened up some of the regulations. Some people can go out now, watch games. Restaurants are starting to open carefully. The terraces outside, some of the restaurants and the bars will be opening the end of the week. So the people are out there in the streets. It feels like the tropics now. It does not feel like hockey weather at all, but in the purest sense, it's absolutely hockey weather, because there's no other game in town, certainly in Montreal.
So Dan mentioned Marc Bergevin, and I'm curious, does he get any credit for this? He seems to be such a reviled figure in Montreal for so long, right? Everything he's done has backfired. She fires Claude Julien, and everybody's like, oh, that's his last move. That's his last chip. He's all in now. If this doesn't work, is this enough?
I can't see how it's not. I mean, you know, really, there's Marc Bergevin polarizes the fan base in this town like no one else I've ever seen. There are some people who would like him lashed to the steel cross on Mount Royal during a thunderstorm. And there are other people who think, look at the moves the guy's done. Look what he's done. Okay, so a 5-year plan is X number of years. I mean, this plan is gone forever. There's the proverbial full generation of Habs fans to whom the Stanley Cup is a rumor, right? They just know that other teams get it and it never comes to Montreal. But you know, you have some fans who are absolutely thrilled beyond words that this is happening, and others are going, oh my word, this means that Marc Bergevin keeps his job. So, but this is okay. Understand that this is a city where if the Canadians had a Stanley Cup parade, half the fan base would complain because they're standing on the shady side of the street. So that's what Montreal is. All right. And that's the joy or the agony or the absolute puzzlement of following hockey in the city, because you're never going to satisfy everyone. Everyone's an expert. Everyone knows when they walk into that building or they walk into the bar or any place, they're a better general manager than Marc Bergevin. But somehow Burge has managed to work some magic with this team, and we'll see how far it goes. But I mean, how can it not be deemed at least a very reasonable success, having knocked off these two teams and become the champion of Canada?
Well, look, they're playing better than anyone could have imagined that they'd be playing right now. But they were built to win at this time of the year. Their size, their strength, their experience, right? I mean, they were built to win at this time of the year, especially with their goaltending. So they are playing better than you know anyone could have imagined at this point. But I wanted to ask you, last one for me. So you're also a big hockey historian guy. So where does this rank in Canadians history? I mean, they're like you said, they're the champions of Canada. They're not the Stanley Cup champions, obviously, yet at this point. They got a ways to go till that, a lot of work ahead. But I mean, there's history here, right? I mean, they're the second team in NHL history to win 2 7-game series in a span of 8 days. The Tampa Bay Lightning did it in 2011 against the Pittsburgh and Washington, right? They're the third team in NHL history to sweep a playoff round after overcoming a 3-1 deficit in the prior round. And they're the Montreal Canadiens, which is a team rich in hockey history. So where does this rank at this point for Canadiens lore, I guess, because of the uniqueness of this entire season and these playoffs too?
Well, they're what, Dan? I think they're the 1960 Montreal Canadiens went longer in a stretch of not trailing. Is that stat right?
I mean, yeah. So 1960 did 488 minutes and 38 seconds. And right now, the current streak for these Canadiens is 437.53.
Yeah. So you're never going to compare the 1960 Montreal Canadiens to this team. I mean, the eras, it's a mug's game trying to compare the generations and compare the teams in Montreal. You know, there are fans in this city to whom the history of the Montreal Canadiens begins with Saku Koivu. And that's not a knock on them, but I mean, that's, you look at, it's just a changing demographic. I mean, the fan base now and the way that the team is marketed is to a younger crowd, and they are the consumers of hockey now. There are still some fossils out there like myself who will still talk about Rocket Richard, and we'll talk about Elmer Locke, and we'll talk about the great names of the past. But there is a great sense in this city now that this team can do something very special. And if you're not going to put them on the same level as any of those teams, there is something that is supposedly in the DNA of the Montreal Canadiens, and that crest, that fabled jersey, that if you wore that sweater, or you wear the jersey as it's called today, you can play to a different level. You understand what the significance is. And I think that also occurs in Toronto. But, you know, for the Canadiens to have knocked off Toronto, that was absolutely massive, because, I mean, that still is one of the great rivalries. That one goes back to 1918. But I think that you're never going to compare, you know, the generation. You're not going to compare this team to that 1976 to 79 team. You're not going to compare the quiet dynasty of the 60s. You won't compare the 56 to 60 team to this one. But there's something about the Montreal Canadiens doing well in the springtime that is very engaging. And one of the things that's really nice is that it starts to bring stats like you're quoting now to the fore, and it gets fans looking back into the history of the Montreal Canadiens. So to those fans to whom Saku Koivu is the beginning of hockey history, they may read a little bit more now back. And some fans are taking some quiet satisfaction in the fact that Austin Matthews, who became the first Toronto Maple Leaf to win the Maurice Rocket Richard Trophy, is playing golf or doing whatever hockey players do in the offseason. And the Canadiens are still moving forward, and Rocket is looking down with a bit of a wry smile on his face.
Well, Dave, you might think it's a mug's game to compare the generations and the teams. I don't. This is the least talented, most anonymous Montreal Canadiens team ever to be put into this conversation. Is there a Hall of Famer on this team?
I don't know down the road. Is there? I mean, you have to look. I mean, people will still say that Saku Koivu's number 11 should be retired by the Canadiens. And you look at how many sweaters are hanging up in the rafters at the Bell Center. Those are guys who accomplished tremendous things with monstrously talented and monstrously successful teams. So, I mean, he happened to play during a time when the fields were a little bit fallow, right, to be charitable. So but you're completely right. I mean, there is no individual who kind of jumps out at you as being the superstar. Some people will say that Price is the guy. Is he? I don't know. That's subject to whatever you want to talk about. Is Shea Weber the guy? Shea Weber's a great defenseman. He's got a storied career. He's done very well. Has he won? I mean, that's what ultimately is going to be the thing that determines where you are and where you judge these guys. But I think you're absolutely right. This is based on all of these other teams. These guys are the invisible Canadiens. So good for them to be doing what they're doing with the parts that they have.
Yeah, no question about it. Well, Dave, they're keeping you busy too. And we are done keeping you busy for this podcast, but we appreciate it. And there's a lot more to come. So enjoy it. Enjoy the ride.
Hey, we'll see if we talk from the Stanley Cup parade route, right? Who knows? Although in Montreal, the road will be under construction. And they won't be able to hold it anyways.
All right, Dave. Thanks a lot. Appreciate it. All right.
My pleasure.
Sean, great to get Dave on. Like I said, I mean, he's got away with words and certainly knows the Montreal market better than I think anybody that we could have on this podcast, to be honest with you.
I'm going to go old school because Dave's old school, and that's not an insult. He would embrace that. His Rolodex for those
and he has a Rolodex, I'm sure.
For those of you who are of the younger Saku Koivu generation, don't know what a Rolodex is, it is a rolling thing with cards in it, index cards with phone numbers. Dan, you might have had one at the start of your career. I had one at the start of my newspaper career, and it was filled with local high school coaches from North Jersey. Not as good as being able to flip through and going to L and being LaFleur, going to, you know, D for Dryden. Anybody you want to get on the phone, he'll get them on the phone. Unbelievable storyteller. The part we didn't get into, and we should have got into, it would have made it even more iconic of a podcast, is back in the day, Dave Stubbs was a referee in the WWE.
Yeah.
And he was involved with guys like Andre the Giant, Jimmy Superfly Snuka, and all those guys. It's funny. We're all hockey guys, and we get together at various places. Nobody ever wants to hear Dave Stubbs' hockey stories. He starts to tell them, we're like, hey, no, tell us the story again about when you got thrown out of the rink by Andre the Giant.
Yeah.
So we didn't bring that part up, but maybe when we have him on over the summer, when things are a little slower, we'll do story time with Stubbs.
We'll do a whole wrestling podcast with him, actually. I'll learn, because I don't follow it, but I used to, and I wish I knew that, like, when I watched it, if I knew Dave Stubbs at the time. But anyway, it is fantastic. Let's get to our next guest, who also, by the way, is fantastic. Coached for a long time in the NHL and now doing some great work with NHL Network, Bruce Boudreau. He joined us a short while ago. Here is that interview with Bruce Boudreau. Bruce, thanks so much for hopping on with us. The big topic of conversation, we've talked about it. We talked about it with Dave Stubbs, our columnist up in Montreal, obviously, is the Montreal Canadiens. So let's ask you, I mean, this is a team that hasn't trailed in 7 straight games. How surprised are you by this from what you know of the Montreal Canadiens and the roster that they put out there?
Well, I mean, I think anybody that says they're not surprised by it is lying, quite frankly. I mean, but we've seen it through sports history that sometimes you catch lightning in a bottle and you just get that feeling that you can't lose. And it seems to me that the way they're playing right now, they believe that they're going to win every game.
And I mean, obviously that's an unbelievable thing, and you can't, it almost seems like you can't generate it, right? Like, as a coach, you can't go out and say, I'm going to make my team believe this. It has to be an organic process, does it not?
Yeah. Like, I mean, it has to be. I agree with you wholeheartedly. I mean, when I was in the East Coast League, I mean, when we won the championship, we weren't the best team, but all of a sudden everybody started clicking and we played the right way all the time. We had confidence in everything we did, and no team that we played, which all were above us in the standings, we ended up beating. And it has everything to do with confidence, belief in yourself, and the fact that now you're automatically doing the right thing all the time. And that's what it seems like Montreal's doing to me when I'm watching them play.
I mean, they have Carey Price, right? So he's obviously been terrific. But here's the question I have for you, Bruce. Like, Carey's very respected around the league. Yet he really seems to get inside shooters' heads. I don't know if that's actually the case, but it certainly looks like it's the case. Why is it that he is so good, or at least looks to be so good at that? Is it the level of respect that the players in this league have for Carey, that when he's on his game, they're almost so worried about trying to score on him? Can they try to score on him? Do you have a take on that?
Well, I don't think it's that. I think it's when, you know, when we're in the playoffs and we unfortunately or fortunately listen to all the comments that other players or coaches make from other teams. And the one thing I get about Carey, he talks so like it's matter of fact. This is what's happening. This is what's going to happen. And, you know, you end up believing him. He doesn't sound overly excited when he talks. He's never like overly emotional when he talks. You just believe that when he says, you know what, we're going to start scoring pretty soon. And automatically they start scoring. And, you know, we're defending really well. Then they defend really well. It's just like he's the word I'm coming to mind is a soothsayer. He's like, whatever he's saying is coming true. And the other team's going, oh man, if Carey Price is saying this stuff, it's got to be true, basically. And I think that they take that with him. I mean, he has that last series, the last 3 games, he didn't have to make too many saves. I mean, but what he did do was he certainly gave the, his team belief that they could win. Just like in game, I think it was 4 of the Leaf series, you know, when they lost to make it 3-1, he said, well, we're going to start scoring goals. We're okay. Let's not panic. Let's not worry. And it's almost like the team says, okay, yeah, Carey says that. We're going to be fine. It's all going to work out. And I think that's the effect that he's having on his team and the other team right now.
The other series that was played last night, and we're doing this on Tuesday, was the New York Islanders and the Boston Bruins, and the Islanders win a nail biter 5-4 to take control of that series. They're up 3-2. Just on a big picture, you know, to me, it's one of the most intriguing series of this round. What have you seen out of that series as a coach?
Well, I mean, for example, last night, I knew Boston was in trouble after the first period. I mean, and it seems like in the game before, I thought they were in trouble after the first period, because when you outplay a team that badly and you do not get rewarded, the other team usually comes back and bites you in the butt. And that's what happened. I mean, Boston was all over them in the first period, and they come out with a 1-1 tie. That's one of those periods where you have to have a 2-0 lead at the end of the period. And as soon as that happened, you know, oh, here we go. And even in the game in the island, the previous game, the Bruins were all over them, but they're not getting rewarded for their efforts. And eventually, you cannot have that. You can have the effort, but you don't have that kind of success for 60 minutes. Usually, it's a great first period. You can't be as good the second period because the other team's getting crap in the room and they're playing better. And then you come out in the third and you sometimes, most of the time, get rewarded. But the Bruins didn't get rewarded in the first period of the last two games. And I thought, the Islanders are believing now and they're going to come out. And this is Islander hockey and they're going to have success. And fortunately for them, they did.
I got to ask you as a coach, what do you think of Cassidy, Bruce Cassidy and Barry Trotz, and I don't know if I won't go as far as calling it a war of words, obviously, but you've got Barry pointing it out that Patrice Bergeron may cheat in a faceoff circle. And what happens? He gets tossed twice in that game, get 5. And then after the game, Cassidy calling them the New York Saints and how they can do nothing wrong. And he respect Bergeron. I mean, look, he got fined $25,000 for the comments that he made about the officiating being critical of it. But as a coach sitting back and watching these things go on, what is your sentiment? What are you feeling what are you thinking when you're seeing this go on?
Well, I think it's hilarious. And I'll tell you why, because at the beginning of every series, you know, the coaches and the managers all get on a conference call with the league and they start talking. We don't want you no playing games with the referees, no doing this, no doing that. And every time the team gets behind, they start doing the same thing. And I mean, by Butch actually showing video of it, I said, I know he's getting dinged for a big fine on this one, because I got fined when I was in Minnesota for saying one thing about the officials that I very carefully worded and thought this was going to be fined, and I get the call, it's $5,000. And then you knew that this one was going to be a big one, but it had some merit, and Barry downplayed it. And it'll be interesting to see how the next game is being called. Either the refs are going to be really mad and not give him a break, or it's going to even out, one of the two. But the face-off being the face-off thing with Bergeron, it would be interesting to see if he got kicked out. Did he get kicked out twice the game before? Because a guy that cheats like that usually gets kicked out once or twice, but the older guy usually gets the advantage, and the younger and the linesman gives the older guy the break, and the younger guy doesn't get any of the breaks. So maybe just because out of respect, he's getting a little more added gifts on the face-off is something that is possibly happening.
Bruce, I don't want you to give away any coaching fraternity secrets, but how much of what's going on, and it is unbelievably entertaining, is real in what these two coaches believe, and how much of it is playing to the refs and saying things that maybe they don't believe to back up their team? And you know, coaches have so little that they can do, you know, as far as other than X's and O's. They can't go out on the ice and change the tenor of the series. Is this something that you as a coach really enjoyed this kind of psychological warfare that goes on over a 2-week period?
I don't know whether I enjoyed it as much as it's a necessity. You do whatever you have to do to help your team win. And, Bruce being down 3-2 now, he thought that this was the time that he's got to make a little comment, A, to show his team that he's backing them all the way and that to keep going and we'll just be successful, or to B, that he really has a little bit of a gripe. I mean, if you watch behind the bench last night, he was pretty vocal quite a few times. So I think what was happening was it was building up. And by the end of the second period, when they're down 4-2, he's getting a little livid and he's sucking it up sort of because the team was still in a 2-2 fight in series games. But now that he's down, he's got to pull out all the stops. And when that happens, and then you got Barry, who you always see is sort of like in control behind the bench. You very rarely see him overly upset. And he's just in a calm, monotone way, sort of, saying, no, I don't understand. This is not right. And it's more ticking off Bruce than it is ticking off his team. It would tick me off if I was so mad and the other coach is so on an even keel, that would just make me madder. So, I mean, I laugh at those things. I think those things are funny.
Well, and then he comes back in the post game and says, I don't know what he's talking about. We were the least penalized team in the league this season. And they were.
Yeah. And that's what Bruce's point was. And here's the clips. And so he's getting madder at that. Then he wants him almost to agree with him. So, I mean, it's sort of funny, but at the same time, he's getting under Bruce's skin. And that would be what his goal would be.
And the other thing, though, that we have to look at in this series is the goaltending for the Bruins. Tuukka Rask, that he doesn't get pulled necessarily just because he gave up 4 on 16 shots. Butch was honest, as he always is, after the game and said there, it was maintenance. He wasn't 100%. So here you are going into a must-win game now. And what do you do? Do you play the goalie who might not be 100%, but he's been there, done that, he's your guy? Or do you play the young kid who's never done it before, but he's healthy?
Yeah, I mean, it's a difficult question. I mean, my question would be, is Bruce protecting Tuukka when he didn't think he was up to his, played his best and used it as a, that he wasn't completely healthy and it was maintenance? Or he could have gone the other way and said, Jesus, I've watched this guy for 10 years now and he makes those saves. I mean, I'm pretty sure that in a final game or a potentially final game like game 6, that if Tuukka says he can go, he's going to be playing.
Yeah, I wouldn't expect anything less. I mean, he's so competitive, and you saw him after he got pulled last night. Like, he was just livid.
Yeah, he wasn't happy.
Yeah, maybe at himself, maybe at Bruce, whatever, but he seems to be the kind of guy that feeds off of that. I want to switch gears and go out west for a bit. One game into that series, a lot of people thought it was over. They were ready to crown Colorado as the champion of the Honda West division because of the speed they showed in game 1 and the way they really took it to Vegas. What do you think's turned in that series? We're at 2-2 now. Vegas has dominated the last 7, maybe 8 periods of that series. As you look at it tactically, what's changed?
Well, I mean, the first thing that comes to mind is you haven't seen Nathan MacKinnon skating end-to-end with the puck. Every time he touches the puck, somebody's pressuring him and making him get rid of the puck, and then they're staying with him so he can't get it back. So they're basically eliminating him from the offense, and I firmly believe that's exactly what you have to do if you want to have success. If you remember game 1, especially on the power play, he would wind up, he was going so fast that, I mean, nobody could stop him coming into the zone, and now they're putting a guy behind so you can't do the drop to him and making Makar come up the ice slowly. And get, sure, they're getting in the zone, but they're not doing it with the speed that they did. And I think Vegas's speed is really, if you look at it, is you don't think it is as the Colorado speed, but it is. and their guys can skate, and they're pressuring the puck everywhere. And other than that first game, I think Vegas has been the better of the teams the last three games, or at least the last eight periods anyway. And you can go one step further as the last game that they played at the end of the year, when Vegas had to play two men short, I think they outshot them like 40-18 or something like that and still lost. But I mean, they know they can play with them. They know they're as good as them, and confidence against Colorado goes a long ways.
And doesn't this go back to something I think you and I talked about one time, Bruce? It was about McKinnon in the playoffs last year. I think when you were saying, when you were coaching your team against guys like this, would be like, we have to shut that guy down. If the other guys beat us, well, I mean, the other guys beat us, but don't let that guy beat us. And it seems like that's what Vegas is doing with that line. Like, let's do whatever we possibly can here to limit them and take our chances with the other guys.
100%. I agree with that. And that's every time we played Colorado or Edmonton, it was the same thing, is let's make sure that they don't beat us. And I always get that from baseball, when I forget what manager always said, we are going to walk Reggie Jackson all the time, but he's not going to be the guy that beat us. And I think the Dodger manager in the 80s, forget his name, he said that. And that's what you don't let the best players beat you. And hopefully your support system is better than their support system, and you have success. And I think that's the last two games. You haven't seen or heard too much of Nathan McKinnon or Landeskog. Rantanen scored a goal, but other than that, it hasn't been much. And they've controlled that line, and when you control that line, you pretty well control that team, because every one of those guys are playing 22 to 25 minutes a night. So they're playing half the game. So if you can control them, you only have to control the other three lines for the other half of the game.
And how much is Nazem Kadri not being involved because of his suspension make that harder for Bednar to work around that, or easier for Pete to get what he wants out of his matchups?
Well, that's an interesting question too, because let's not forget that Nazem only had one goal in his previous 27 games. So how much of an offensive threat would he be? Even though he's good in the bumper position, he hasn't been doing it offensively this year. So, I mean, he's probably, he's a good player. I mean, and he's probably missed, but I don't know if the value of how much he has been missed, quite frankly. It's not like he's a 40 goal scorer, like say Pacioretty being missed and then coming back and fitting right into that puzzle piece that makes their team go. I mean, I think it's been a little bit of a struggle for Nazem this year. So, but I think they would like him back because he makes their team on paper a better team.
Yeah, well, he does. I think he does. Absolutely. And then get him back in game seven if it gets there, because that eight-game suspension was upheld. So I wanted to – let's switch. Look, the Tampa Bay Lightning and Carolina Hurricanes are going to be playing game five here in a matter of a couple hours as we record this now on Tuesday afternoon. So can't get too deep into the weeds with that one because things could change. But I just – from a big picture standpoint, Bruce, do the Tampa Bay Lightning and the way they're playing and handling these playoffs at all remind you – of the way the Pittsburgh Penguins kind of did it when they went on a repeat run?
Yeah, I think I thought from the beginning that this is going to be one difficult team to beat. I didn't think at the end of the season it meant anything to these guys. They were all in about preparation for the Cup. I think they're all in. I think John Cooper has done a marvelous job at preparing them to be the team they are right now. And they do it almost like unemotional. They know what they have to do. They're emotionally involved, but it's all like kept inside. But they are playing the game and playing a very good Carolina team, and they're making Carolina's penalty killing look almost obsolete. Their power play is what, when I was looking at it the other day, 47% or something in the series. It was ridiculous amount. And when you do that, you take away the other team is now afraid of being physical. They're afraid of doing anything in case penalties are called. And then you have no confidence going into the penalty kill. But I think, I would think that Carolina is too good to lose tonight, but I just don't see them beating Tampa three in a row. but I didn't see the Leafs losing three in a row either, so you never know.
Bruce, I want to ask you about Rod Brind'Amour from the Hurricanes. I don't know if they're going to come back or not, but you know, he's clearly one of the best coaches in the league, is probably up for coach of the year. It's so rare that a really established player becomes a really good coach. It doesn't seem to happen a lot, whether they can't translate what they did on the ice to their players or they don't have an interest in doing it. What do you think makes Rod such a good coach?
Well, I mean, first of all, I think his work ethic is as a player was second to none. And then his work ethic as an assistant coach, I really think that between the playing and being the head coach, being an assistant coach, has really helped him out. And I think he's being a nice person. When he was an assistant coach, he gained all the respect from the players. And he's not asking the players to do anything that he wouldn't do. And I mean, you can tell by his press conferences that he really cares for his team. And I can tell you right now that if you care for your team, it shows through. The players will play for you. And I think that's what they've got in Carolina with Rod. And I think that's why he will win coach of the year. And, he's done his due diligence. He's smart. He's won a cup as a captain, I think, or I don't know. He was the captain of Carolina, right? It wasn't Stahl at that point, was it?
It was Rod. It was Rod. Yeah.
Yeah. I think, you know, that adding up is all those life experiences has made him a really good coach. And you can call him a player's coach or whatever. He's probably very hard on the players that don't work as hard as he expects them to work, but he's not doing anything that he wouldn't ask himself to do. So I think that's some of the reasons why he's a great coach. I don't know him personally, but I mean, that's from afar watching him. And he would be a guy that I'd certainly want to play for.
We would be remiss if we didn't ask you about you. Do you like what you, I mean, you're doing a great job here breaking these things down. So I know I see on the NHL Network all the time. You like what you're doing now? And do you want to get back into it? Do you want to get back behind the bench?
Well, you know what? I really love coming to Secaucus and doing that, the TV stuff. I have a hard time watching the game. I watch all the games. I have a hard time watching because I got, I'm not in the fight, and I really do miss being in the battle with your group when you've been doing it, you know, way, you know, more than half your life. It's tough to stop. I really do would like the opportunity to coach again. I don't know if it's going to come, but I certainly would like it. I think that's one of the reasons why I keep studying the lineups and watching all the games, not just because I got to talk about it and on TV, but because, you know, you learn so much every day. I mean, when you're watching games, I mean, from the new tactics teams are using, the new systems, like when you're a coach, you're always a coach. You're watching games as a coach. And I think that's the way I watch it. But to answer your question, I do want to get back in. I hope I'm given the opportunity, but time will tell.
Bruce, before we let you go, I'm going to go on a little fishing expedition here. I know that you recently bought another junior hockey team that's going to play in Hershey. Is that correct?
Yes, it is. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, and I know you spent a lot of time in the AHL coaching and playing, and your new team is going to play in the old Hershey Arena, not the new one, not the Hershey Park, but the one that's actually inside the park. Do you have a good story from that rink? To me, it's one of the most iconic rinks in North America. We had this conversation with Mike Doc Emmerich when he was on, and he called some games from there. Do you have a good story from playing in that arena?
You know what? I don't know if I have individual stories about that, but I mean, I can tell you, we played in 1980. We lost in the finals in that building, and I do have a good story. But I mean, the fans were like, the glass was short, and when we used to go out through the exit, it was incredible. The what you would hear from the fans, and they would throw things at you. It was a rough building to play in. It was like playing in the old Boston Garden or something like that. But we were in the finals too against Hershey. Hershey was playing Portland in 2006. I remember me and Kevin Dineen almost got into a fight we were practicing there and we were supposed to have closed practices, and he snuck in and watched us, and me and him had a mouth battle going up between the stands and myself on the ice, and the media, you could just see the cameras going from one guy to another guy to one guy to another guy, and it was quite funny, and nothing became of it because I would have got beat up, and I don't like that. And so that worked out. But this is an iconic barn. I mean, it's where Wilt Chamberlain scored his 100 points. I was just there this morning. It's got such a great history in it. And everybody you talk to says, man, it was the best place to play in. When you were in the American League, the building you wanted to play in was Hershey. And because it was loud, the seats are almost straight up. So, you know, the crowd is right on top of you. And it's going to be fun having the kids play there this year.
That sounds awesome. By the way, that story with you and Kevin and Ian sounds like a better war of words than Bruce Cassidy and Barry Trotz. I will say that, because it sounded like a real war of words.
It was a real war of words, because I told him to leave the building. He told me in so no certain terms to get lost. And then I said something and he said something. And
Oh, that's good stuff. Hey, Bruce, thanks so much for hopping on with us and sharing all your knowledge. We really appreciate it. Enjoy the rest of the playoffs. All right. Keep up the good work on NHL Network.
I will. We'll talk to you soon. Thanks, Dan, guys, and Sean. Thank you.
Great stuff there from Bruce. Great stories, by the way. Sean, I'm so glad you brought that up. Great stories about Hershey and that barn. I mean, I'm gonna go watch the junior team play there now. I gotta go.
It's already circled on my calendar. I'm telling you, there's nothing like it. When I was a kid, you know, my dad was really into the AHL, and we grew up in outside of Providence. He used to follow the Rhode Island Reds, which were the precursor. They were the Rangers farm team, and he would follow them all over New England, all into Rochester. I mean, he was a huge AHL fan. So when I got a chance when I was older and I moved here to go to Hershey to see them play before they moved into their new rink, which is like a little mini NHL rink now. It's unbelievable. But their old rink, that's a barn. And he's right. The seats go straight up, and you're right on top of the ice. It's incredible.
Yeah, that's good. That's great stuff there from Bruce. All right, before we close it out, we've done all the playoff talk, Sean. So let's hit on the NHL draft lottery, which we didn't get a chance to do last week because we recorded it on Tuesday, our podcast, and the draft lottery was Wednesday. The Buffalo Sabres get the one. They need it. Seattle gets 2, Anaheim 3, the Devils 4. You can see the rest of it. Go on NHL.com and follow all the draft stuff from there. But Buffalo gets the 1, and it certainly seems at this point, as we talk right now, Sean, that Owen Power, the defenseman, the Canadian defenseman, is the consensus top pick. He had a great World Championship, helped Canada win gold there at the World Championships. I was looking up – well, I wasn't looking it up. I was reading Mike Morial's story on Owen Power. Gerard Gallant said he's going to be a superstar in the National Hockey League. Guy played 24 minutes and 17 seconds in the overtime win against Finland for the gold medal, and he played 24:02 in the semis against Russia. So he's a minute eater. I don't know much about him, but just from reading a lot of stuff that Mike was writing, it seems like he's, I mean, right up what Buffalo needs is just continue to build your back end, get Dahlin, get Power, and build from there and try to somehow keep the puck out before you focus so much on putting it in.
Yeah. And, or maybe use a chip of one of those guys, 'cause they have a lot of good defensemen now. But look, Owen Power, he wasn't the consensus number one 3 weeks ago. You know,
Seems like now, though, right?
Well, yeah, they were talking about other guys. And then you have the weirdest world championship that's ever been contested, because guys didn't want to go because it was in a bubble and they've already played 56 games. And so the rosters were crazy. Brian Boyle was the captain of the American team. He didn't play all year. Like, every roster looked like that. You looked at him and you were like, where's this guy been? And they'd been playing in Europe for 5 years, whatever it was. So Owen Power gets invited because they don't have enough defensemen. And Gerard Gallant's a veteran coach. I'm sure he did not want to put a freshman from the University of Michigan in his top two. And then throughout the tournament, Owen Power played unbelievably. And I watched a lot of that tournament. It was highly, highly entertaining because nobody knew what they were doing. And there were upsets all over the place. And he was great. You know, he took top 2 minutes against really good teams, the Russians and the Americans and the Finns, shut down role. So I think, you know, scouts were able to see him live over a long period of time, which is a luxury. I think they're going to be really comfortable saying he did nothing to dissuade me from him being number one. And he actually did stuff to make me think he is more of a number one. So I think that certainly really helped his performance. And before we get off of there, if you want to know more about the rankings, you go to NHL Draft Class, our sister podcast with Mike Morial and Adam Kimmelman, and they have Dan Moore on. He's the head of Central Scouting. They're going to have the skinny on all these guys, and they'll have a much better debate than we do. And then the other thing, as a proud American, it kills me to say this, congratulations to the Canadians. They start the tournament 0-3. They're a laughing stock. There was mourning going on throughout Canada. 0-3. My God, the teams they lost to, worst team that ever showed up at the World Championships. Conveniently, in 10 days, that's all forgotten. And what a great group of boys these guys are. You know, good Canadian boys win the thing for Canada, 27 championships. They're like the New York Yankees, right? But good for them, because they should have packed up and went home at 0-3, and they didn't. And to win gold, they beat the three best teams in the tournament record wise, which was the Russians, which was a great game because they hate the Russians. The Americans, they don't like them very much either. They beat them 4-2. And then the Finns, which was a rematch of last year's World Championship, don't like them very much and came back and beat them. So, you know, you mentioned Gerard Gallant. There's a little resume builder.
Oh, yeah.
Hey, I went over to Europe. We started 0-3. Everybody threw in the towel, and somehow I got this cast of misfits to win the tournament. And maybe I'm a pretty good NHL coach here. By the way, let me show you a couple of Coach of the Year awards. Let me show you that I took Vegas to the Stanley Cup final as an expansion team. Maybe I know what I'm doing.
By the time we record our next podcast next week, he might have a job, right? I mean, I'd almost be shocked if he doesn't, to be honest with you, based on who he is, his resume. He didn't need this to be a top candidate for the Rangers or the Jackets or the Sabres, or maybe that's why he's saying Owen Power, by the way, is going to be a superstar, because maybe he's going to, you know, who knows, right? But he didn't need this. It helps, though, because it puts him right back in the spotlight, and it's something recent that he can show on his resume. But, yeah, he might have a job by the time we record our next podcast. Before we get out of here, I do want another podcast in our NHL network of podcasts that you should definitely check out, John. The Chirp with Darren Millard. He had Brad Park and Ken Morrow on, and they're recapping the 83 Bruins Islanders series. A little history lesson for anybody who wasn't around at the time. Obviously, the Bruins and the Islanders are playing right now, so he had some pretty good guests there with Brad Park and Ken Morrow. So definitely check out Darren's podcast, The Chirp. And as you mentioned, Adam Kimmelman and Mike Morial, NHL Draft Class as well. They had Dan Marr on. We had Bruce Boudreau on, and we had Dave Stubbs, Sean. So this was a lot of fun.
It was, and no offense to Darren, but I don't think I'm going to listen to that podcast. I was a 15-year-old Bruins fan in 1983. All right, I don't need to relive any of that. I'm happy to hear Brad Park stories, but I don't need to relive any of that. That allegiance is gone, and it's been gone for a long time as a professional hockey writer for almost 30 years, but there's still that teenage kid in me that doesn't want to hear anything about 1983 or any of those fallow years for the Bruins.
Well, just for that, our podcast next week is just going to be the two of us listening to that podcast. How about that? And you'll have no choice. All right.
And maybe you can bring the 86 Mets soundtrack in.
I will. That's where the conversation that it'll continue right after the podcast. That's the extra show, right? Anyway, enjoy the playoffs, Sean. This is great. Thanks to Bruce Boudreau and Dave Stubbs. Enjoy the playoffs, and we'll talk to you next week.